Time for the season outlook on the world champion, Cleveland Cavaliers, joining us today to go through their prospects for repeating, Chris Fedor. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, Nate. Thanks for having me, bud.
Absolutely. So my sister's boyfriend is from Cleveland. I just saw him when we all got together for a little bit of a family gathering. He showed me this video of him just like actually just like crying in front of his couch on his knees after the final buzzer. Has it sunk in yet for this snake-bitten city that the Cavaliers actually won this thing?
Yeah, I think it has. I think it took a little bit of time after it to sink in, but I think now it has. And the running joke actually on Twitter is that no matter what happens with the Indians and if they get to the World Series, no matter what happens with the Browns losing every game, it looks like at this point, it's okay because the Cavs rallied from 3-1 against the Golden State Warriors. That's the ultimate punchline now for Cavs fans that they continue to go back to, is that everything's fine because the Cavs rallied from 3-1 against Golden State.
Yeah, it's really something that when you looked at it after game four, before Green got suspended, for me, it felt like, you know, when you look at it in a macro sense, it was incredibly surprising. But for me, actually, as it was happening, each individual game result didn't surprise me that much because Green was out in game five. They were at home in game six. And then, you know, they had won two in a row by the time game seven rolled around, and the Warriors were injured, and obviously LeBron and Kyrie were playing it incredibly well. So do you remember thinking back just to what the mood was at that time? Was there just a feeling of dread after game four, and how long did it take before people started to really believe that, all right, this might actually happen?
It's a good question, Nate. I got the sense after game four, after the Warriors won at the Q, and that was a big wake-up call for the Cavs, and it was a big wake-up call for the fans. Internally, the Cavs still believed that they could do it. I remember walking out of the arena late that night with a member of the Cavs team, and he was walking down the hallway, and he screamed to the security guard, "We'll be back for game six." So there was an internal confidence with the Cavs going into game five. But fans, shortly after game four, I think they were nervous, and they were nervous up until the point where Draymond Green was announced that he was going to be suspended. And I think that's where things obviously changed in the series. But I think that's also where things changed from the fans' perspective, because all along Cavs fans were thinking, if they can get it to game seven, even though it's at Oracle Arena, if they can get it to game seven with LeBron and Kyrie and all the pressure on the Warriors after the Warriors got up in the series, that's going to be advantage Cavs. And there was a perfect storm of circumstances, starting with Draymond Green getting suspended for game five, that made pushing this series, that is 3-1 after game four, to a game seven. So the minute that it was announced that Draymond was officially suspended, Cavs fans started to believe again, and the confidence picked up, because I think Cavs fans felt like if Draymond wouldn't have been suspended, if he would have been there for game five, there would be no game seven, there would be no game six, and the Warriors would have wrapped it up in five.
So let's turn to this year now, and the way I usually like to start off in projecting these is to look at how good the team was last year, and I think we can talk about that first, and then maybe talk too about the relationship of the regular season performance to the playoffs, since that's obviously what they're shooting for. But how good were these guys last year during the regular season?
I don't think they were that good, and I think they felt like they weren't that good. They were winning games at the beginning of the season when they had David Blatt as the head coach, but as David Griffin mentioned at the time that he fired David Blatt, there was something missing with this team. There was a belief missing with this team. There was a confidence missing with this team. There was a joy missing with this team. And I think that all goes back to the fact that they didn't believe in the guy who was the head coach. And no matter what his record was, David Blatt, I can't take that away from him. The Cavs wouldn't take that away from him. They talked about him being a smart basketball guy, but he just didn't communicate in a way that his players wanted to follow for one reason or another. And if you don't have the belief in those guys, and if those guys are going into games or series thinking, we don't have the right guy on the sidelines, we don't have a guy that we trust, we don't have a guy that we respect, it doesn't matter how much talent you have, eventually that's going to catch up to you. So at the beginning of the season, they were missing that belief, they were missing that confidence. They make the coaching change, and then I felt like they became a completely different team. It took some time for that to happen, but they became a different team. So the regular season, for me, Nate, it was very, very interesting. It should probably be broken up into segments, and I think that's how the Cavs Cavs viewed it. But overall, there was so much drama. There were so many things going on behind the scenes. LeBron referred to the team at one point as fragile. He talked about how Golden State won the NBA championship and they were playing harder and they wanted it more than the Cavs. So there was internal frustration with this team. And I think part of the reason why they were able to rally from 3-1 against the Warriors is because they had to deal with some adversity. They had to deal with some dark times, and they knew how to respond to those kinds of situations.
Yeah, what did Ty Lue do strategically that was different from what Blatt was doing? Obviously, he succeeded more in the emotional aspects of coaching, but was there anything he did strategically that maybe even if it didn't show up in the regular season, was important in the finals, stuff that might carry over into this year?
I think there were two things, even though maybe numbers don't necessarily back this up. The Cavs said that they were playing faster and they were getting into their offense quicker and they were getting easier shots rather than methodically running through their offense. That was the first thing. He talked about it since the day he took over as head coach.
To me, the big difference was just LeBron James actually listened to him and he didn't listen to David Blatt.
I think there's some truth to that for sure. And I think there are going to be arguments about whether, you know, that's a good thing for LeBron or a bad thing for LeBron or what that means for LeBron. But again, there are certain voices that people are going to trust and certain ones that they're not. And LeBron always leaned on Ty, even when David Blatt was here. So I think the other thing that Ty did is that, and this goes back to how you communicate to a guy, you know, he went to every single player shortly after he was hired. And he said, this is what I want from you. This is what I want from you. This is what I want from you. And he went down the entire roster and he said, forget the outside noise, forget what people are writing about you, saying about you. And the Cavs players heard some of the stuff that was said about them. They read some of the stuff that was written about them, about whether Kyrie should be playing off the ball, whether Kyrie was a me first guy, whether Kevin Love was a fit. So Ty said, forget all that kind of stuff. This is what I want from you. And it seemed like the players, it got to a point where it wasn't the players having these conversations amongst each other and taking offense to it or taking it the wrong way. They were accepting of some of the criticisms from their teammates and they were giving it back to the teammates. And I think the team learned through Ty how to communicate with each other in a way that was going to bring out the best of them, as opposed to making it seem like they were finger pointing or there was passive aggressive tweets, LeBron James, or anything along those lines. And I think the other thing that he was able to do, he found a lineup for the second unit that became one of the best, most productive lineups in the postseason with LeBron James, Matthew Dellavedova, Richard Jefferson, Channing Frye, and Iman Shumpert. And it's a lineup that David Blatt hadn't used.
Yeah, I remember, especially against Toronto, where they just ran the same play like five times in a row, which was just like a go for Dellavedova into a pick and roll with LeBron, and they had Frye in the backside corner, and Toronto just could not stop it. They ran like six different options off the play. LeBron was getting alley-oops, Frye was getting open threes, like Dellavedova was getting floaters. It was just that lineup was excellent. But then one thing I really liked that Lou did too was when it wasn't working in the finals, he went away from that lineup. You know, I think he was very willing to adjust and try to find things that worked, which was something that was needed against the Warriors after they got blown out those first two games. So let's turn to this year now. But first, this quick word.
So if you'd like to manage your money a bit more like the Hawks or the Warriors, and perhaps less like some of the less frugal teams that we've seen, you should consider Betterment. Betterment is a great way to go. You can learn more about them at betterment.com/capspace. They are the largest independent automated investing service out there. One of the great products they have is Smart Deposit. If you're someone who has a variable income, what it can do is take money out of your account once you get above a certain preset limit. So if you feel like you need to have $5,000 in your account just to be safe, anytime your balance goes above $5,000, you can set it so that it'll invest that money for you automatically. That's just one of the smart services that they have. And Betterment is at a lower cost than more traditional financial services. More than 150,000 customers choose Betterment's advanced advice algorithms and beautiful user interface to manage over $4 billion of their dollars. Again, you can get started with them and in saving for your retirement or other financial goals with 6 months of no fees at betterment.com/capspace. That's betterment.com/capspace. Betterment, investing made better.
All right, so much of the same cast returning. They did lose Timofey Mozgov. Dellavedova, they did not match on him, allowed him to go to Milwaukee. 4 years, $38 million. Looks like he's actually going to start there. Were you surprised at all that they didn't match that? Is that something that could come back to haunt them with some of the kind of hole that they have now at backup point guard? But, I mean, it seems like it was never even in consideration given LeBron's tweet congratulating him the moment that he signed the offer sheet or it was reported.
Yeah, to me it was kind of strange, Nate. Like, I understand the thinking behind it. When you have a guy like Kyrie Irving and he's one of your most important players and he's there for the long term, it's hard to convince ownership and it's hard to convince yourself that you need a backup point guard that's going to make $10 million per year or right around that range. Financially, it didn't make a ton of sense for the Cavs given their roster setup. At the same time, I mean, they knew that Mo Williams was going back and forth on retiring, not retiring. They had some problems with Mo that they had to work out themselves. And they knew that
they would... Can we talk about that
for a second?
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but it's really been like quite the drama there. I mean, you heard rumblings that he was unhappy with his role last year. He claimed to have this knee issue. Then during the offseason, he vacillated back and forth on retirement. First, he was retiring. Then he was coming back. Then David Griffin hits us with the bombshell that he actually is retiring. Mm-hmm. And then he shows up on Instagram a couple of days ago with this thing saying, hey, I finally got right. I'm having this surgery, which coincidentally, he hasn't been released yet. And it should at that the fact that he had to have this surgery might mean that he gets his money, even though he is kind of retiring. Can you shed a little bit more light on that drama?
Well, it was really, really funny because at Media Day, Richard Jefferson was saying, I was having a competition this offseason with Mo about who was actually going to retire. Because if you remember...
Yeah, because RJ, yeah, he was like, oh yeah, I'm retiring right afterwards. And then he's like, you know, maybe I'm not going to retire.
He was like, after all, you know what, I can get the mid-level exception from the Cavs. I can have a chance to compete for another championship. So he made a joke about it, but it was clear that the players did not care that Mo wasn't there at Media Day. And it was clear that in their mind, they had already moved on as if Mo wasn't going to be a member of the roster. And he decided ultimately that he wasn't going to file his retirement papers. He had conversations with the Cavs about his knee, and those were going all the way back to last year. And he went to Dr. James Andrews for a second opinion, and everything that the Cavs said to him about his knee was confirmed by Dr. James Andrews, and neither one of those parties thought that Mo needed surgery on his knee. He was able to find another doctor in New York, the same doctor that performed the shoulder surgery for Kevin Love last offseason, and that doctor said, you know what, you do have a knee problem, you do need surgery. So he finally got the opinion, and I guess the validation that he was looking for, that something was actually wrong with his knee that required surgery. And now, as of right now, Mo Williams is taking up a roster spot from the Cavs.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess they'll just release him at some point, right? Like, I mean, there's no reason to keep him on if he doesn't want to play and he just had the surgery.
Right. I mean, in their mind, they don't consider him part of the point guard depth chart. They're looking at their point guards right now as Kyrie Irving, probably Kay Felder as the backup point guard, and they're looking at maybe using Iman Shumpert for stretches there. They can use LeBron there for stretches. They're looking at Jordan McRae maybe as playing a little bit of point guard in emergency situations. So when they look at their point guard depth chart, they are not considering Mo Williams at all. But this is kind of the reputation that Mo has. He's an emotional guy. He does get upset when he's playing a specific role. And if you look at it from his perspective, Nate, you can kind of understand it. I'm not saying I agree with how he's done this offseason. I mean, it's probably the worst thing that a player could do to the Cavs, and the Cavs now have to deal with this going into the regular season and the financial ramifications and all that kind of stuff, not knowing if he's going to retire or if he's going to play. But from his standpoint, you know, he was signed last offseason and he was looking at a situation saying, okay, Kyrie's going to be missing time because he's rehabbing from a fractured kneecap. I'm going to slide in there. I'm going to be the starting point guard when Kyrie's not there. And then I'm going to shift into the backup role. That's why they signed me here. That's why they went out and brought me here. And then all of a sudden, Matthew Dellavedova has a career year. He adds a three-point jumper, becomes one of the most reliable outside shooters that the Cavs have, and suddenly Mo Williams doesn't have a spot on this roster when Kyrie comes back from his injury, and he's looking at a situation saying, what the heck happened? I thought you guys wanted me here. I thought that's why you brought me here this offseason. So I think that's where he's coming from, but he let all of that stuff really get to him last year, and I think that's carried over into this year, and that's part of the reason why you saw his Instagram, where he took a clear shot at the Cavs.
So we went a little bit far afield here, but that was something I wanted to talk to you about, because it was a rather mystifying situation. But yeah, for Dellavedova, understandable why they let him go. I mean, not only is it we're paying $10 million a year for a backup point guard, but it's also $10 million a year when we're in the tax. And so it's really, that's more like $30 or $40 million a year in terms of actual money. Now, you could make the argument that he obviously was in demand. You don't want to let an asset go for nothing. Maybe they could have traded him away, but you're probably not going to get a first rounder even for Dellavedova when he's on that contract. And now you don't want to be in a situation where you have to cut luxury tax money either. And then they also, the other part of it was that they were able to get a trade exception by doing a sign and trade, which the Bucks agreed to, and the Cavs paid them a little bit of cash, I think, in exchange for that as well. But then that allowed them to basically get Mike Dunleavy for free from the Bulls. And how is he going to fit into this team this year?
I think he's going to be a piece off the bench. And if the wine and gold scrimmage is any indication, if some of the preseason games are any indication, he's going to be that designated marksman coming off the second unit there to spread the floor, allow the Cavs to have some versatility offensively, defensively. I think there are questions about him defensively, obviously. There are questions about his health, too, given the fact that he missed so many games last year with the Bulls and given his age. It's funny because he was asked earlier this offseason, Nate, if he has to do anything special to get his back right so that he can play and be effective. And he's like, I'm 36 years old. I have to do that every single day to get my back to a point where it's going to feel good enough to play at a high level. So I don't think the Cavs are going to demand too much from him. He's probably the 8th, 9th, 10th guy on the roster now that JR is back in the fold, but he's going to be that guy who's used to space the floor, open up driving lanes for LeBron and Kyrie, stand in the corner at times, knock down three-pointers. To me, he's just somebody who allows Ty to have more flexibility and more options of what lineups he can use and what kinds of offense he wants to run. I think it's a big move for the Cavs because they try and surround LeBron and Kyrie with so much shooting. And I think they were one short in terms of a shooter, and Dunleavy brings that kind of element.
Kay Felder, they paid $2.4 million to buy that pick, the number 54 pick. He now is looking like he's going to be the backup point guard. They're going to need him because Kyrie, you don't want him playing too many minutes. Same thing with LeBron, even if you're going to move him into a backup point guard type of role at times. Can Kay Felder actually not kill them at backup point guard this year? I mean, there are a few number 54 picks in history that you would say could come in and actually contribute to a championship level of team.
Right. And then if you toss in the fact, Nate, that he is 5'9", and that's going to create obstacles for him to begin with. And there's a huge step up in competition. It's not like he played at Duke or Michigan State, played at Oakland. So it's going to be a step up in competition. And those things naturally are going to give him hurdles that he has to overcome, not even to mention the fact that he's coming in a championship environment, and there are going to be expectations on him because, you know, the backup point guard spot was one that obviously helped the Cavs. Matthew Dellavedova was part of their best lineup in the postseason, and Matthew Dellavedova was a guy who allowed the Cavs to keep Kyrie Irving's minutes down last year. During the regular season, Kyrie averaged 31 minutes per night. So when they got into the NBA Finals and some other players players were wearing down or they were exhausted or they had played so many minutes throughout the course of the season. Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Steph Curry. Kyrie's fresh. He's more fresh than a guy should be going into the NBA Finals. But the Cavs were able to limit Kyrie, limit the things they asked of Kyrie, because they trusted Dele so much and because Dele allowed them to trust him so much because of how he evolved as a passer, because he didn't turn the ball over, his feisty defense, and because he grew as an outside shooter. So now you're looking at Kay Felder. If you want to keep Kyrie's minutes between 31-33 in the regular season, you're looking at Kay Felder to take on this big role. And to be honest with you, Nate, to answer your question, I don't know how a rookie in that situation could be ready for that sort of thing. I remember this offseason, David Griffin was talking at Summer League saying, you know, we hope that one day he becomes our third option at point guard. Now all of a sudden he's sliding into the number two option, supposed to play consistent minutes so that Kyrie can keep his minutes down. It's just a lot to ask of the kid at this point.
Yeah, I agree. And also when you look at the fit of his game, he is more of a shot creator.
Right.
And you know, not really much of a 3-and-D guy. I don't know how he is on spot-ups. And they don't really need shot creation on this team. They have three stars who are awesome. And he's presumably is going to be out there with James for the most part, and certainly with Kevin Love. So I think he can play. I think that's clear. He's better than your typical number 54 pick. But the fit also is a little bit of a concern. But that said, even with Mo Williams out, who cares at this point? Like, as long as they get out by the offseason, there'll be some buyout candidate. They can try to make a trade or just get somebody who can be enough of a stopgap, or maybe even, you know, they just play him, and then in the postseason you ramp up Kyrie and LeBron to 40 minutes a game and you barely need to play the guy. So that could be another option too, or you can just roll with you know, not play him at all and just play Shumpert more next to LeBron or something in a big backcourt. I think it's not the end of the world, especially because it's not like they have a ton of competition in the Eastern Conference. And that's when I think the big themes for this year is going to be that this regular season, I mean, I can't think of a regular season that has ever mattered less for a team. They already won the championship. They've won before on the road. Nobody in the East looks that scary. I'm sure they have plenty of confidence that even if they're the two seed and they're still the favorite for the one seed, even they take it easy. So, you know, just let them kind of work it out and they'll get there, I think would be my approach if I were David Griffin and company.
Yeah. And the other thing, Nate, is as we were talking about before, LeBron can play point. He's best when the ball is in his hands. Amon Shumpert, is it ideal? No. But do you have the option to go to that? Him playing some point guard minutes? Yes, you have that option. And the Cavs have been experimenting the entire offseason, Summer League, and sometimes in practice with Jordan McRae, with the ball in his hands more, initiating the offense. Now, they toned that down a lot here towards the end of the preseason because it was a lot to ask and it was a big adjustment for Jordan, and they didn't want to flood his mind with all these different things. They didn't think it was fair to him, but because they have such a versatile roster, there are other options of guys that can take some of those minutes in spurts. And you also mentioned, Nate, that for the Cavs, it's all about the postseason. It is. So that means, look, they have already kept tabs on Mario Chalmers and his recovery from the Achilles injury. They're keeping tabs on Norris Cole. They're keeping tabs on Kirk Heinrich. So there's some other guys. They brought in Tony Douglas and they let him go. But before they brought in Tony, they were looking at the landscape of the other point guards on the market. Ultimately chose Tony Douglas for a variety of reasons. Part of it is because he's healthy at this point, whereas Mario Chalmers just got cleared late August for basketball activities. But that's a player and that's a situation that the Cavs are going to keep their eye on for this entire season.
Who do you think can get better on this team from last year?
I think Iman Shumpert has to, Nate, and he worked the entire offseason trying to get better. We talked to him shortly after media day about some of the stuff that he did this offseason, and he said, you know, when I was looking back at last season, there weren't a lot of highlights. He replayed the four-point play against Golden State in the finals in Game 7 over and over and over again. Part of it was because it was a huge play. The other part of it was there aren't too many other Iman Shumpert highlights that you're going to find from last year. So he knows that he had a down year. He called it, quote, statistically the worst year that I've ever had in the NBA. He lost weight. He's healthy coming into the season, something something that he wasn't last year when he was dealing with the wrist injury. He worked out in the summer. He went to Miami with Kyrie to work out against him. They went one-on-one. Jordan McRae was also invited to that. So he did all of that this offseason, and he changed his shot mechanics. He said he wanted to get more lift on his jumper so that he could be more reliable as a jump shooter and more reliable as a three-point shooter. So given what he gave the Cavs last year, it's nothing of what they expected when they gave him $40 million in the offseason. It's nothing of what they expected when they traded for him and J.R. Smith was the actual throw-in in that deal.
Right.
That's how it was supposed to work.
He got way more money than J.R. as a free agent last year, even though Shumpert was restricted. He to me, was one of the keys. I felt like they weren't going to be able to stop anybody without him. And obviously, I think that wrist injury really set him back as well early on. He came back a little earlier than expected from that, as I recall, but never really found his shot and, you know, only started five games. I mean, people were thinking that he was better than JR, that he was going to be the starter going into last year. And obviously, that changed in a big way.
And that's what he said, too. He said, basically, when I came back from that wrist injury, number one, I was overweight. I wasn't in basketball shape. And I felt like I was playing catch up for the rest of the season. And he was never able to unseat JR. Even in the NBA Finals, the Cavs played JR so many minutes because they felt like they couldn't afford to keep him off the floor and play Iman Shumpert with the way that he was playing. It was nothing like what they got from Shumpert the year before in the postseason against Chicago and then moving forward into the playoffs before he started dealing with a groin injury. So I think he has himself ready mentally and he has himself ready physically to be better than he was last year. Now it's up to him. Is he going to knock down those shots? Is he going to give the Cavs the defense to warrant the kind of minutes when JR is off the floor? Because JR has turned himself into a two-way player. Ty Lue called him last year the best defensive player that we have. And this was during the regular season going into the postseason series against Toronto with DeMar DeRozan. So it has become harder and harder for the Cavs to give Shump minutes because it's been harder and harder for the Cavs to take Smith off the court.
Yeah, and Shumpert is going to be essential if they match up again in the finals with the Warriors to guard some of the perimeter threats that they have. They're going to need to get some more defense on the floor compared to last year, I think. So anybody else pop out to you as somebody who can get better?
The Cavs are really excited about Jordan McRae. I did a piece on McRae for Cleveland.com going inside his summer and everything that he was asked to do and everything that he tried to do. But general manager David Griffin, in an interview with me and in an interview with NBA TV, used Jamal Crawford as a comparison. And I was like, wow, wait a minute, hold on, back the trolley up here a minute. And then he said, I'm not comparing him as like, that's what he's going to be for us. And all of a sudden he's going to start winning the sixth man of the year. But he said, in terms of style, in terms of what he can bring on the court, that instant scoring, slithering to the basket, getting to the free throw line, knock down outside shots here or there. McRae shined in the summer league and he's been, I know it's just preseason and I know that the Cavs haven't been playing their regulars, but McRae has been the Cavs' best player in the preseason as well. It's somebody that when you talk to David Griffin, when you talk to Ty Lue, when you talk to all the other players, they get a smile on their face talking about McRae and his growth from last year to now, and they think that he's going to have a spot in this rotation. I'm wondering how much JR being re-signed is going to factor into that, but McRae is a guy that the Cavs seem excited about coming off the bench.
Yeah, the only thing you worry about, again, is that his primary skill is shot creation and, yep. And how much is that actually going to happen. But again, you could just, he could, if he's just simply a vehicle for their main guys to get more rest, I think he becomes valuable in that role. I would say that Irving is going to be better in the regular season this year than he was last year. He actually had a down year in terms of his efficiency. He was actually one of the worst rotation players they had in terms of how the team performed when he was on the floor. His defense, I think, was really bad. He picked that up in the postseason. So I expect him to be more efficient now that he's not coming off of that fractured kneecap.
I agree. And I think the same could be said maybe about Kevin Love, because he had a full off season this year and he was able to do things this summer that he wasn't able to do last summer because he was rehabbing that injury that he was coming back from. And you know what? To be honest with you, Nate, I think you can say this about a lot of guys for the Cavs, because there's this element of them being more free, this element of them not having as much pressure on themselves, and this element of them being more comfortable in their own skin and who they are and the things that they can provide. And they don't feel like they're validating themselves or responding to critics constantly. So Kevin Love has said he feels more comfortable. Ty Lue has said that he thinks Kevin, Kyrie, all these guys are going to be more comfortable because of how they played last year and because they won the NBA championship. There's just been so much lifted off of them and so much validated that wasn't the case coming off a loss in the finals against Golden State last year.
What about potential regression candidates for this year?
I think it's possible that Channing Frye maybe has a hard time getting consistent minutes with the depth on the team and with what he's going to be asked to do. I've been sitting here thinking to myself, Nate, just like, where's he going to fit? How are they going to use him? And Ty Lue said the other day that, like, he has this special plan for Channing Frye, but he wouldn't reveal exactly what it was. So I wonder how he's going to play as part of that second unit, when that second unit is probably going to be run in the regular season by Kay Felder as opposed to Matthew Dellavedova, or how they're going to use Channing Frye and Mike Dunleavy together in the second unit when they both have some issues defensively. They create mismatches offensively, because if you put them on the court at the same time and you got two shooters on the same side, it's like, where do you go? Do you go try and get the ball out of the hands of Dunleavy on a swing, or do you try and limit Channing Frye, make him put it on the deck, that sort of thing? But defensively, he's going to have issues, especially in the same lineup with Dunleavy, if the Cavs plan to go that way. So I think Channing Frye and the effectiveness that he had throughout the course of the postseason might have people thinking that he's going to be that Frye from the Atlanta series, the Toronto series, and I think it still remains to be seen at this point, with the regular season about a week away, just how exactly the Cavs are planning to use him.
Yeah, I would agree on him. I mean, Richard Jefferson is another guy too, especially, and when we talk about regression too, the last time we saw a lot of these guys was in the finals. I think expecting Kyrie to play as well over a full regular season as he did in the finals, especially on defense, is perhaps unrealistic, though I think he'll be better over the course of the regular season. Richard Jefferson was incredible in the finals. He was like bouncing off guys, finishing at the rim, hitting his threes. Like, that's at his age, that's probably not realistic. I agree with you on Frye. What about LeBron James?
I think LeBron has it in his own mind, motivated enough to try and chase that fifth MVP. I'm not saying that that's his number one goal, but he's always someone who is well aware of his history and his place in the game. J.R. Smith said it the other day that despite the Cavs winning the NBA championship, they're, quote, not the talk of the town right now. So they're hearing all the things said about the Golden State Warriors, listening to that kind of stuff. And LeBron is healthy going into the season. He worked this summer on his jump shot a lot. So yeah,
that's the biggest reason for optimism, because the big reason why I felt like he wasn't close to the conversation, well, I shouldn't say close, but he was, well, actually with the regular season Steph Curry had last year, I would say that I thought LeBron was not close to the conversation for the best player in the league. And the biggest reason I thought that was that he couldn't hit a jumper anymore. And now teams were laying off him. They could go under on pick and roll. He wasn't able to drive by guys nearly as well because they were able to lay off and let him shoot the jumper. But he has had times in his career when he's been really effective shooting the jumper, and especially in Miami. And so why it was that his jumper basically abandoned him for almost a year, and then also the fact that team back in the finals was huge for them being able to score against Golden State. So if that's real, if that really comes back, if he can reverse that trend, and his jumper has looked pretty good in the preseason from what little I've seen, then I agree, maybe he can forestall a decline. But on the other hand, you know, he's going to turn 32 in December, and even all-time great players are going to start to fall off around this age. And it's a credit to him that he's been able to maintain as much as he has as he's gotten into his early 30s. series, which not a lot of players can, even the all-time greats.
Yeah, and I think the other thing, Nate, going back to something I said earlier, LeBron, obviously he's going to be motivated. There's no question about that. That's always there for him. But he's also going to be more free, and there has been a weight lifted off him too. Like, the number one thing that was missing from his resume was the perception of winning an NBA championship as the guy, no questions asked, because I think there was still...
Yeah, that was kind of bullshit, though. I mean, yeah, he was, the 2 years that they actually won in Miami, like, Wade was injured both of those years, so it's not...
Right.
Like, LeBron was the guy. He was clearly, and you know, he did not have as much support, especially in the playoffs, those 2 years. And one of the years, Bosch missed, like, two series, too. Like, so if that was the perception, like, that was definitely an incorrect one, but I understand where you're coming from.
And the other thing that was missing is the championship for Cleveland, the thing that he said that he wanted to accomplish as soon as he came into the NBA when he was drafted by the Cavs, and he's wearing that all-white suit for draft night. You know, he said, I want to light up Cleveland like Las Vegas. I want to end the title drought. He never ran from those expectations, and I give him a lot of credit, because some guys would run from those expectations, but now he has accomplished that goal that he set out from the very beginning of his career, and the one that he made mention of specifically when he announced his return to Cleveland in the summer of 2014. So I think there's something lifted off of him, and I think that's going to allow him to play with more joy, be more loose, free. He doesn't have the David Blatt thing at the beginning of last season like he did then. So I think there are all of those kinds of things. I think he's very much, look, he's going to try and limit his minutes. He's going to try and gear himself up for the regular season or for the postseason and not expend it all in the regular season, because he knows that when he has to flip the switch, he does. But I think he's going to try and get that fifth MVP. And I certainly think he's going to be in the conversation.
So what do you see as the potential playing time and lineup issues that Coach Lou is going to have to sort out, other than the ones that we talked about, backup point guard, obviously? Mm-hmm. Are there any other competitions for minutes that you think are going to manifest during this year?
No, because I think most of the other stuff, Nate, is going to be about matchups. Like, the backup to Tristan Thompson at times, it's going to depend on what it is the Cavs are going to want in a given game against a specific opponent, because they've got Birdman Anderson now, who's there for energy, defense, rebounding. They have Channing Frye, who's there for spacing the floor, providing some offense.
I got to be honest, if they play Birdman over Frye, like, that's going to be some head desk moments for me. I mean, Birdman is done. As far as I'm concerned, and Frye is very underrated to me, especially just his shooting from the center position and how good he can be on that second unit with James running the show. So yeah, if that Anderson actually does end up playing over Frye, like, when they're legitimately trying to win games and not just for rest purposes, I think that would be a mistake.
I think there are going to be some matchups and some situations where they'll lean that way just because of what it is they want at that specific time. But I agree with you, for the most part, if you're looking at a set rotation, Frye has that edge over Chris Anderson. There's no question about that. The other thing that I think Ty is going to struggle with, and this is not really a struggle, but he's going into the season with the goal of, okay, we've got to be healthy for the postseason. And I want to limit Kyrie's minutes. I want to limit LeBron's minutes and Kevin's minutes. But it's hard to do that when you're actually in the game and you want to win that game. Like, that's the plan going in, and it's easy to say that. But when it's a 2-point game, you want Kyrie in there or something like that. Or when you're actually in the heat of the moment, it's hard to take Kyrie off the court or LeBron off the court and rest them extended minutes if you have questions,
you know,
on the second unit, and I think the Cavs do.
Yeah, you know, I think, and I can't remember if it was LeBron who said this or someone else, I think it might have been LeBron, that minutes isn't so much what it is as it is games, and so maybe the better strategy is just, all right, we're going to rest guys for more games and just not even subject ourselves to that temptation that you're talking about.
Yeah, and that's one way that they could certainly handle it. It's not necessarily how things were done last year, but obviously they were dealing with things, they were working some things out, but I would agree with you. I think that would probably be better from the Cavs' perspective, because I think there are going to be times where there is more temptation to extend these guys a little bit longer, because I do think, look, when you're a championship team and you have this payroll and you have this roster. It's hard to say that there are questions, but I do think there are questions right now with the Cavs' second unit because of the losses that they had. And Ty even admitted the other day that there are things in his own mind that he's experimenting with to try and find some stability with that second unit like he was able to do last year in the postseason.
One thing that I'll be watching closely is the backup wing minutes. Obviously, the 2 and 3 as the starters are prescribed with Smith and LeBron. Mm-hmm. But then you've got Shumpert, who they're hoping is going to bounce back a little bit. Jordan McRae, you said, is looking pretty good. They want to get more time for him. Dunleavy was acquired. He's a smart player. And LeBron has always loved his game. And then Richard Jefferson was effective for them last year as well. And so I don't expect that all of those guys are going to be good this year necessarily, but they've got much more depth in terms of those wing positions than they often have. And I think that also now can facilitate more units with LeBron at the four and maybe with Love at center as well, that some of their backup center issues can be helped there. And really, other than backup point guard, they have a lot of depth on this team, maybe for the first time. How do you think it's going to shake out between let's put it this way. Rank these guys in order of who's going to get the most minutes. Shumpert, McRae, Dunleavy, and Jefferson.
I would say Shumpert, Jefferson, Dunleavy, McRae.
Yeah, I think Dunleavy, it just depends how much he has left.
Yeah.
I think he could actually be the best of those guys if he could play the way he played 2 years ago. But again, you said he's 36 coming off the injury. Mm-hmm. Did not play particularly well for the Bulls. He still executes really well defensively and has always been one of these kind of RPM all-star type of guys, but he's going to be a defensive liability. And while I think that's a good acquisition, a lot of it too is going to be we're focusing so much on the matchup with the Warriors, and I don't know if he's going to be able to stay on the floor against them. He might be better in the regular season, but then they have to go with Jefferson and Shumpert more in the playoffs, and especially if they match up against the Warriors. So what do you think is the best crunch time lineup? The big issue for me is, are they going to close with Love at center, or are they going to close with Tristan Thompson at center?
Yeah, so I'll say this. I don't think it matters the opponent, Nate. I think whoever the Cavs are playing against, their best lineup is going to include Tristan Thompson just because of all of the things that he can bring. He's an underrated screener on offense. Some people say he gets away with moving screens, but he's a great screener. He frees up guys, J.R. Smith, Kyrie Irving. He has a nose for the basketball when it comes to rebounding, offensive rebounding, getting second chance opportunities. He can switch on to point guards. He can switch on to shooting guards. And at times, having Tristan Thompson and running pick and roll with Kyrie Irving as the guy that's defending the other point guard, Kyrie Irving's defensive weaknesses can be masked because Tristan is out there and because of the things that he's able to do. So to me, the best lineup that the Cavs are going to have will Tristan, always have him.
I'd rather have Tristan guarding the other team's point guard one-on-one than Kyrie guarding the other team's point guard one-on-one.
Well, you know what? I think there are numbers that probably might back that up. We've seen already here in the preseason, again, just preseason, but Kyle Lowry lit up Kyrie the other night. Sergio Rodriguez, he was able to do some things as a point guard. So the fact that the Cavs don't have Dele and they don't have that guy coming off the bench to pester, bother, be physical with opposing point guards, Kyrie and some of his defensive limitations might be more apparent because the lack of Dele. But that's why I think Kyrie and Tristan, it's so important to have them together because we all know the weaknesses that Kyrie has defensively, and we all know the strengths that Tristan has. And I don't want to say they counter each other or cancel each other out, but it helps mask some of those flaws from Kyrie. And Tristan has proven his value over and over and over again for this team with just all of the things that he can do offensively and defensively. So if it's between him and Kevin, Nate, at the end of the game, I'll side towards Tristan unless, you know, there's less than 20 seconds left or something like that and you need to set up a play and you want Kevin's floor spacing out there. But I think the Cavs' closing lineup is going to be very similar to the starting lineup. It's going to be Kyrie, JR, LeBron, LeBron, Kevin, and Tristan, unless they're playing against like the Warriors or something. And then maybe you have Shumpert in there, or you have Richard Jefferson in there instead of Kevin.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he was, to me, just so essential to what they did defensively in that series against the Warriors, and his ability to switch out. I mean, I think we know this team pretty well. It's going to be the same team. I don't think we need to spend a whole lot of time on what their strengths and weaknesses are. Because I think people really just know them very well at this point. But I mean, is there anything just maybe that's a smaller thing that you could see as a strength that people don't talk about that much for this team?
Look, I don't think they get enough credit, Nate, for how well they rebound the ball, how good they are from that perspective. Tristan Thompson is one of the best rebounders in the NBA in terms of getting second chance opportunities. LeBron's one of the best rebounders at his position when he's engaged. And Kevin Love is still one of the best rebounders in the NBA. So there aren't too many teams that can get second chance opportunities against the Cavs consistently. And that is something that I think sometimes gets overlooked.
Yeah, that's an important part of their defense. And even Love, too, you know, they don't foul that much either. Like, that, it's been talked about that Love, while he is maligned and can look really ugly in some one-on-one situations, unless it's the last minute of the finals against Steph Curry, his teams usually don't defend that badly when he's on the floor, because he hits the defensive glass, and he usually doesn't screw up too badly, and he doesn't foul. So those things actually can help a defense a little bit, even if some of the more highlight plays that can go against him. I think another thing that I look at as a strength of the team is just the overall shooting that they have. I mean, that's maybe not as under the radar as what you were talking about, but just the fact that they don't run the most imaginative offense all the time. A lot of it is just Kyrie ISO, LeBron ISO, but they're able to be effective with that because you've got Tristan Thompson bodying guys around on the offensive glass if they can get to the rim and miss a shot. And then it's just so hard to bring help that simple stuff works pretty well, and then they're not going to turn the ball over on those plays. So while it's not necessarily the most aesthetically pleasing moving the ball from side to side offense with just LeBron or Kyrie go make a play, it works because they have so much shooting on the floor next to those guys. You just can't help.
Yeah, it's another reason, Nate, that Tristan's so valuable, getting those second chance opportunities. It's so difficult for opposing teams to stop the Cavs once in the half court set in 24 seconds within the shot clock. And now Tristan grabs the offensive rebound. It demoralizes the defense. The defense is like, all right, you got to be kidding me. Now we got to stop these guys again in a half court set. We're going to give them two opportunities at the basket. Try and slow down Kyrie. Try and slow down Kevin. Try and slow down LeBron. So yeah, you're absolutely right. And look, the numbers back it up. J.R. Smith, since coming from New York, has made more threes than anybody in the Eastern Conference. He's right there in the conversation with made threes during that stretch with Stephen Curry and Klay Thompson. The Cavs made the second most threes of any team last year, right there behind the Warriors. And I think that's one of the things that makes the Cavs so great. They can play any kind of style. They have shown that if they have to slow it down, they've got enough creators in the half court that can go out and get a shot up before the shot clock expires, but they can play fast because LeBron's a locomotive in transition. Kyrie's very, very good in transition. And you've got JR trailing for threes. They can win the big game too because of Tristan Thompson rebounding, Kevin Love rebounding. Maybe rim protection is something that is going to have to be watched here going into this year because they don't have Timofey Mozgov, and that's something that still has to work itself out. But the Cavs, stylistically, they can do whatever is required, and that's one of the reasons why they were able to match up with Golden State in the NBA Finals, is because when they had to, they were able to use Richard Jefferson in the small ball lineup, or they were able to use Iman Shumpert in the small ball lineup.
Yeah, you thought that maybe they were missing that last guy to go small with, but they were able to get enough out of Jefferson that they were able to get by there in the finals. Other weaknesses that I see, I think, especially now that Dele is not going to be on that second unit, I think passing when LeBron James is out of the game could be an issue. That is not Kyrie's forte, getting other people's involved, pushing the ball up floor, hit ahead passes, just a simple pass is not something that Kyrie does a lot of. You know, when he gets the ball, it's just he might pass it, but he's got to create something first. He's not going to just move the ball to the other side and let other people attack. He's got to create the play first. And then, you know, Love is a decent passer, but Mm-hmm. Other than Love and LeBron, it's hard to see anyone else on this team who really is much of a passer. So that could be a little bit of an issue to me. And then, you know, the defense, especially Kyrie and Love in the pick and roll, is something that I think most teams are going to try to attack as opposed to attacking Thompson in the pick and roll.
Yeah, but you're right about the missing Dele thing, Nate, because so many people, when they hear Matthew Dellavedova, they think, all right, feisty player, tenacious defender, borderline dirty, according to some. They don't think about his passing and his assist to turnover ratio, which was one of the best in the NBA, and the growth that he had, that Dele lob with Tristan Thompson, the Dele lob with LeBron. Dele was an underrated creator to me, underrated passer, and he was a big key to that second unit, not necessarily because of catch and shoot, not necessarily because of defense, but because how he ran the offense. And that's something that I think will show up early in the season. Maybe as the season progresses and Kay Felder gets more comfortable, or the Cavs add somebody, or somebody else emerges into that kind of role towards the end of the season into the playoffs, it won't be as apparent, but early on in the season, I think Cavs fans will start to realize Dele's addition to that second unit had a lot to do with his ball handling, his passing, his assist to turnover ratio, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, the last thing that I see too is I think they're going to struggle to force turnovers on defense. LeBron is okay there, but and Shumpert is too. Who knows how much he's going to play? There's nobody that you look at really as someone who's going to get a lot of steals. All right, so let's talk about the best case scenario for these guys. I mean, obviously that's winning the NBA championship, and you know, I think most expect them to get back to the finals. But just in terms of regular season wins, like, what do you see as the ceiling for them?
Okay, so I had a member of the Cavs come to me right outside the Cavs facility, right where they practice. And this was about a week and a half ago, I want to say. And he said, "Chris, we're really bleeping good." And I was like, "Well, duh, you know, you just won the NBA championship." And he was like, no, we're going to be really good from the very beginning of the season." And I thought to myself, like, what happened last year? And if you remember, Nate, at the beginning of last year, they went 30-11 to start. That was despite, you know, Kevin Love not having his normal offseason. Timofey Mozgov was coming off a cleanup of his knee, and there were questions about him. Amon wasn't out there because he hurt his wrist right before media day. And Kyrie was rehabbing from a fractured kneecap. So despite all of those questions that the Cavs had coming into the year and the injuries that they were dealing with, they got off to a great start. They were 30-11. So I think this team is going to get off to an even better start because they don't have to deal with those things, because they are more comfortable, because they have the same language, they're running the same system, they have the coach that's going to be here for the long term. There aren't those questions hanging over the franchise. And I think they have so much talent, Nate, that even though they're going to try and limit minutes, and even though the regular season and piling up a bunch of wins is not the number one goal for this team, they have so much talent that they are going to pile up wins just because, even though that's not their ultimate goal.
Yeah, I could see them getting a 62 potentially if everything goes right. I think that some of the factors you talked about in terms of the depth at point guard, although they do have a lot of depth at the other positions if guys are resting or not playing that many minutes, which I think until we started this, I especially with Dunleavy and Shumpert hopefully being better this year, that kind of was something that I hadn't appreciated quite as much until we started talking about this. But yeah, I mean, I think 62 wins, they could absolutely get there as a ceiling. I mean, I do think that they might take a step back defensively this year. I think Mozgov still provided some rim protection, even though he wasn't himself last year. You know, I think just the level of intensity might not be there. Kyrie's going to play a full season, which is going to hurt the defense, even if it helps the offense. So I do think that their defensive ceiling, I mean, they were 10th last year and probably better than that in the playoffs when they really locked down. You know, I could see them ending up around 15th in defense, maybe even if things poorly, but you know, their ceiling is probably like 7th or 8th, something like that, I think.
Yeah, and I think they showed that, as you said, in the postseason and in the NBA finals. When they had to turn it on and when they had to play specific lineups, they were able to do that defensively. I don't think they're going to have that same kind of an intensity going into the regular season. There's no question about that. But Tristan Thompson has talked about this offseason, working on some of the stuff defensively offensively that he didn't do last year, or he wasn't asked to do as much last year because Timofey Mozgov was around. And I asked Tristan, I said, you know, Timo's gone. He was looked at as the quote unquote rim protector. Are you ready to step into that role? And he said, I watched some film on that. I tried to work on that this offseason. So he's looking to step into that role. He doesn't have the same kind of size. There are certainly questions about Tristan with that element of his defense, but he looks like he's up for the challenge anyway.
What about a worst case scenario in terms of regular season wins? We're not going to assume that anybody gets a major injury, but just that they kind of take their foot off the gas, or there are some performance declines or what have you.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, again, when it comes to this team, it's all about health. And if they have a significant injury, that's something that could certainly bring that win total down. But, you know, they went 57-25 last year. So 57 games, despite not having Kyrie for a couple of months, not having Iman Shumpert, Kevin Love not having the offseason, dealing with a bunch of drama, a coaching change, stuff like that. So I would be very, very surprised, Nate, even after winning an NBA championship and the quote-unquote title hangover maybe looming over this team, I'd be surprised if they didn't win 55 games. I would be very, very surprised by that.
Yeah, I might put the floor just a bit lower in terms of maybe, because, you know, if Kyrie only plays 31 minutes a night, you've got Felder, and maybe he's just not going to be ready and they don't bring someone in until later in the season. Or maybe even it's the type of thing where it'll be interesting, I guess. I think it's almost likely that they win less games if someone else in the East like goes crazier earlier in the year. Like if Boston somehow is on track for 60 and they're five games behind and they just say, all right, forget it, we can beat Boston, we don't need home court.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're within a game or two, they'll probably actually put their foot on the pedal a little bit more. But yeah, I could see 53 and LeBron. I mean, there's something, you know, the jumper being better, wanting to win MVP, but also just the fact that this will now, he's shooting for his seventh straight finals appearance, and just the regular season doesn't matter at all. And also the fact that he's the age that he is now, you know, maybe he could take a little bit of a step back as well. And I do think that the defense, you know, could be a little bit worse. You know, I don't think they're ever going to end up any worse than like fourth in offense, no matter what happens this year, unless it's a significant injury. But I could see them kind of ending up like 15th, 14th in defense if things just don't go that well, or they take their foot off the gas, as I keep saying. All right, so official predicted record, and why don't we can even just throw in what's going to happen in the playoffs too.
In the Eastern Conference, I think they're clearly the best team, Nate. Look, some teams have improved, and I'm not going to just overlook Boston or overlook Toronto, but I still think that the Cavs, they had a huge gap over both those teams, and I don't think either team has done enough to close that. So they're the class of the Eastern Conference. Nate, I think they win 61 in the regular season. Not that it's their goal to win 60 or anything like that, or they're going to try extra hard to get to that mark or try extra hard to get the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. I just think they're going to be that good, and they're going to win games based on pure talent, a talent gap between them and other teams. I think their C game can probably beat a lot of these teams because of who they are and what they have. So I'll say 61 wins in the regular season. They go back to the NBA Finals, another appearance in the NBA Finals for LeBron. And my guess is that the most likely matchup is Cavs and Warriors in the NBA Finals.
So they're going to win that or not?
Already, huh? Already.
That's why we do this. It's fun to set some expectations. I mean, are you, if you say Warriors, are your listeners going to riot here I think the Warriors will beat them. I think that's what most people think. You know, whether it'll be a close series or whether, you know, the Warriors are just going to roll through them, you know, I'm not sure yet. And I do think that LeBron just, like, he can't be as good at 32 as he was last year. I was shocked that he was able to be as good as he was in the playoffs last year, in the finals last year. So I am a believer in LeBron. I think he's the second best player of all time, but I think he does have to start slowing down just a little bit at some point, just due to, since time immemorial, old age has been undefeated.
Yeah, I'm a believer in LeBron. I'm a believer in the Cavs, Nate. But again, going into this year, I mean, I don't think they're the best team in the NBA. I think Golden State State is the best team in the NBA. And for the Cavs to beat Golden State last year in the NBA Finals, it took a lot. It's not excuse making. It's just an honest assessment.
And the Warriors were not the same team that they were either.
I mean, there was reasons for that, obviously. Yeah. Bogut was down. Andre Iguodala wasn't healthy. Steph Curry missed some time in the postseason. He was less than 100% in the NBA Finals. They were missing one of their most important players in Game 5. So, you know, there was a lot that went in favor of the Cavs in order for them to get that NBA championship. It's taking nothing away from them. It's just honestly assessing what happened in the NBA Finals. So Golden State improving on the team that we saw from last year in the Finals, where it took the Cavs a historic rally. It took them 7 games to beat Golden State. It would be hard for me to say that the Cavs are going to be that much better than they were last year in the NBA Finals, and that's what it's going to take to me in a 7-game series to beat a souped-up Golden State team.
Yeah, and also, so for my prediction, I'm going to go 56. I think their over-under was 56.5. I took the under, barely, but that, again, is not a nod to their quality. I think they're clearly the best team in the East, more just some of the external factors that are at play, and then maybe that backup point guard situation as well. All right, you got anything to plug before we get going here? Tell us about the work that you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, you can check out all my stuff, cleveland.com. It also appears, if you're local, in the Plain Dealer at times, the newspaper. Yes, there are still newspapers, but mostly cleveland.com is where my stuff appears. And you can hit me on Twitter too, at Chris Fedor.
You do some radio stuff too, right?
Yeah, I do. I host on the weekends at 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland. It's a CBS radio affiliate. So my show on Saturday, and this is right now, it's obviously going to change when the season starts, but my show on Saturday is noon to 3, and then Sunday morning, 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. So yeah, I'm all over the place, Nate. There's no question about that.
All right. Well, thanks so much for coming on, Chris. You can follow me on Twitter at NateDuncanNBA. I actually have some writing to plug. I got drafted to do a little freelance work for ESPN. I am doing their Central Division player profiles, following in the great tradition of John Hollinger and Kevin Pelton. I will try my best to do those luminous names justice. So the Chicago Bulls actually came out today with the ESPN Insider. You can check that out, and I should have more of those coming out throughout the week, as fast as I can pump out those 5,000 words on a daily basis. And then we'll be back. We're gonna still got 3 more: the Utah Jazz, the Heat, and the Timberwolves. So we'll get those done before the rest of the regular season, which is only a week away. I can't wait for that. We'll talk to you all again soon.